Welcome to Trax Cultures. I'm Mike Piccinato, your host. This podcast unravels the intricacies of transitions across cultures. For those feeling the pull of change or supporting loved ones through it, this podcast is for you. We understand the uncertainty and excitement that come with such transitions, and together we'll explore how to adapt while maintaining community and belonging. Throughout our episodes, we'll draw on insights from the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Whether you're moving to a new place or supporting someone who is, this podcast offers encouragement and connection. Enjoy the conversations as we navigate the challenges and joys of cross-cultural transitions together. Welcome to episode 25 of season one of Trax Cultures. And this episode was recorded almost a whole year ago on August 24th, 2024, right before Alyssa and I returned on home assignment. It's part two of a series that was released 2 weeks ago. And in this episode, Stephen and Jenny give Alyssa and I some great tips as we get ready to go back on home assignment. And we talk really candidly about things that we wish churches would know about us and about some of our hopes and fears about the coming home assignment. We jump right into the episode with a question I have for Stephen, continuing the conversation from 2 weeks ago. Please enjoy the podcast. Stephen and Jenny, maybe with your experience doing debriefs with workers that have come back, what are some of the challenges that you see when people underestimate the impact of the transition coming back?
This is a tough one because I think the challenges are really big, but I think they often are not obvious until later.
Is it possible to overestimate the challenges going back?
No, I don't think so. It's always hard.
Great. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I suppose that if you go back and like put yourself in a box because you're like, it's just going to be so terrible and you don't do anything and don't interact with anybody, that would be bad. But usually I feel like what we have seen negatively is people blow through the transition, not give themselves the space, whether that's physically the space for even something as basic as jet lag, or I don't know. I think there's something about, so when you go back for something like a home assignment, there is a chapter mark in your life, whether you want it to be there or not. And I think it's really, really important to wrestle with the endings that have happened. Again, whether they were chosen or not, some of those endings are, again, super basic, right? So like for you guys, the ending of living here for, you know, like an unspecified amount of time, that's very soon. You guys won't be living here.
Yeah.
And you currently are, and that's an ending. And you're intending to live here again. But at this point in time, right, you will have abgemeldet, right, deregistered that you're living here, and that's an ending. And taking time to process that ending is really important to say, okay, what is the meaning of that ending? And I think the most successful debriefs that we've had with people are when they're able to step back and say, okay, what were the endings that happened because of the last chapter, whether that's 4 or 5 years or whatever? And then what are the endings that are happening because of this chapter? You know, maybe this chapter time-wise is shorter than the last one, but it has its own endings connected to it. And when people have been able to press into that and to recognize those things, sometimes there are senses of maybe mourning or lament. Sometimes there's even celebration. But either way, stopping to recognize that is really, really, I don't know. I think that's where we've seen people kind of, you see the weight sort of come off of their shoulders a little bit. You see the exhale because they're feeling all of those things. But if they haven't taken time to identify them and do something with them, then it's really tough.
Would you add anything to that, Jenny?
I think as I'm reflecting on, yeah, some of the debriefs, I know there was a lot of concern expressed about the people and relationships that weren't going to happen over the next year. And just the process of working through that, I think, was an interesting thing to see in a conversation with people we didn't necessarily know very well, but they were like reflecting on relationships that were very meaningful to them. And yeah, I don't know that there's a specific tip. What I observed, like Stephen said, that loss or grief of that year or however long that they were away from the people either that they were mentoring or working with or just friendships. Yeah, it was interesting to see process.
One of the challenges that Alyssa and I are facing, and we see this for people that come on internships or on longer stays as well, but that the process of saying goodbye is really helpful when you know how to plan for it. Mm. Like if you know you're leaving after you've been here for a year, months in advance, you can start thinking through when are those things going to happen. And in our case, for a variety of reasons, the duration of our going back is longer than expected. And so...
And you found out late.
And we found out late. So there have been incidents where I've realized, oh, I saw that person for the last time 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And that does make that process of saying goodbye, some of those good closures, more challenging because you can't prepare for them.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa, what do you think it would be helpful for people to know about workers who are in transition, whether that's a family member or as somebody showing up at an event or at a church? What would you like people to know about that person who's in transition back from being overseas to the U.S.?
I think that person is probably more sensitive than you'd expect, especially since they're able to stand up in front of a group and explain and share and look lively. They're also still pretty sensitive because if you did a good job connecting in the country or the new culture that you moved into, it should hurt to extract yourself from that to go back to your first country. But we're supposed to be positive and we try to be positive. But yeah, there's a lot of sensitivity that's not very deep. It's not underneath very deep skin.
Almost a rawness.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes just the very little things of the dailiness, that's one of the things that I miss the most when I go, is just that the banter that happens at the office or the exchanges that happen when one of your kids comes home from school, the super dailiness. And so having some of that, finding a way to be able to get some of that while visiting different churches or while visiting family and friends, getting to be part of just super daily things is really comforting.
There's also often this approach towards us as if we're experts.
Yeah. I just told my German friend that I've already been asked a little bit by, because we have people that come from the States to work with Envision Berlin quite often, and sometimes they'll ask, what do Germans think? And I wouldn't be able to answer what do Minnesotans think after living there for the majority of my life. Even if I had never moved overseas, it's really hard to be a representative for an entire country. And so I could say these are things that I've seen and things that I think maybe they might be partly what some people are thinking, but it's super hard to be a representative for any entire people group, especially if it's one I wasn't born into.
We will also be going back to churches that we've been in before, sometimes churches where we've worked. One of the things I've noticed in the past is there'll be a lot of young people that will come up and say hi without realizing how much they've changed in the last 5 or in this case now 12 years. And
so, I am so the old lady that says, my, how you've grown. I can't hold it in.
And I think another part of that is both the joy when you go into a church you haven't been in for a while and you see how many new people are there, but also some of the sorrow when you recognize that there are people who are not there for a variety of reasons. Maybe they've moved away or...
The person I watched the funeral online for last month.
Yeah. Yep. Those are other difficult challenges going back. Another thing I think, so some of those same things apply to when you see family, but that's more challenging, right? I mean, if you haven't seen family for 5 or 6 years and you go back and see them, the kids are suddenly... I mean, they were little kids that were just playing on an iPad and now they're teenagers just playing on an iPad, but it's still different. I think another thing that people often underestimate about the impact on us is how we engage with cultural changes that have taken place back in our sending country because we haven't been a part of them. And so mm-hmm. often two things happen. One, our opinion gets incredibly discounted because we don't understand the culture anymore. And that can be challenging.
Which is an assumption.
It is an assumption. And there are times, though, when they're completely right. Mm-hmm. And we don't understand motivations that are just normal for everybody.
Mm. That sentence has sometimes made me get defensive when I've heard it. because I did spend the vast majority of my life still, even after about 12 years in Germany. I still claim my Minnesotan-ness pretty strongly. And so that's where it's like how to be humble and understand that, yes, there have been changes and I've changed, but there is also a certain amount of sharedness still. And so I don't like feeling like my opinion suddenly doesn't matter. Well, I don't like that at any time, actually. So maybe that's also part of it.
But I think it's similar to what Jenny was saying earlier, the idea of suddenly, oh, wow, now I'm the visitor on the ranch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there's definitely, like, I think that's something for me moving to Minnesota from Nebraska that I understood at certain levels. But I think, again, just not having gone back there for years and doing something completely different. And even like Stephen shared, like people not necessarily fully understanding what, maybe they understand the stories that we tell, but not necessarily, you know, they're not understanding the concepts of daily life. Even though sometimes if you make a list, the list could look very similar to somebody else's list, but how those daily activities are played out are very different.
Like wake up, cook breakfast, kids right. to school, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go to take work. The dog for a walk. Mm-hmm. Go
but
to
how
coffee.
You guys walked your dog in Watertown is very different than how you walked
100%, your dog. 100%. And it's not because of the individual dog.
Although that's a factor.
but still 100% different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or kids getting to school is totally different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah. They ride a bus.
Uh-huh. And they're both yellow.
The funny thing is, one of the kids was asked by a classmate here at their school in Berlin, like, are American school buses real? Is that a real thing? It's not just in the movies. And they're like, yeah, I rode one like every day. So like, it's funny, those little things that are like, really? That's still a question? But yes.
I think you're talking about like, what should people know? Alyssa, you're talking about what should people mm-hmm. know about international workers when they are there. I think one of the things that I always enjoyed asking, and usually I think the IWs I interacted with enjoyed being asked, was what do you wish people would ask you? Because I think a lot of times you get a lot of the same, like questions in the same direction. And sometimes you get oddball questions that are just all over the place and you don't know where it's coming from. But I feel like very rarely are you asked the question that you actually want to talk about.
Mm. That ties in probably to people not knowing, okay, what is it that you're actually doing in the place that you're working? Mm-hmm. What are you participating with? And if there was more understanding there would be of that, then the questions would match up more. And so then it's how to bridge that gap.
One of the questions you have in the book, Stephen, is in what ways have you changed while gone?
There's too many to count.
Well, the follow-up question is, do you think others will recognize these changes in you? Or do you think they will expect you to be the same as before? And I think it's a challenging mm-hmm. combination of question, because it could be flipped too. In what ways have people there changed while we've been mm-hmm. gone? And will I recognize it?
Mm-hmm. Or will I accidentally say something hurtful and not have any clue while I'm saying it, what it means to them because of something that I missed?
And so maybe that's something for people to know, that I've changed and you've changed and I haven't been there for your change and you haven't been there for mine. In some ways, we might still be the same as we were before, but in other ways, maybe different. And especially if that's combined with that rawness.
Mm-hmm. And with the other thing that you're mentioning, too, that you weren't there for various events, right? So like there are all sorts of things that have happened in the place that you were sent from that you weren't there as part of the processing. And so whether it was a good event or a bad event, it was processed without you. And so just some of the nuances of what those things mean aren't obvious.
We weren't there for the hurt. We weren't there for the healing. And we don't have some of the inside jokes. And mm-hmm. so
there's and for some of the celebrations.
Yeah.
Which are the things that help you not, because life isn't all about the hurt. There's also the celebrations, and those are so important.
I think sometimes those are the things that we miss out on, like being not a part of daily life, or the, like, not even the big celebrations like weddings or graduations, but like the little ones of like, oh, they passed a test and they were really stressed about it, or they that project that was being worked on was successful or went better than they thought. Like the things that you might hear about, well, someone is really stressed about something, but then did you hear the result of, or did you hear the, I don't know, the thing that released the tension? Yeah, sometimes we miss out on the release points.
I think maybe something else that I would want people to know is just because it was on social media does not mean I saw it.
I've been struggling with that one for years because even it doesn't matter even if you're on it every day. It's not the same as talking to someone directly or sending a message to someone directly.
Yeah, so assume I don't know the big change in your life.
Right.
Yeah. For me also, even if you told me, like I don't know how many times I have found out for the second time that somebody like is having a baby or something, and I'm surprised both times.
Like double the celebration.
As long as you're surprised positively.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think that's another piece of it though, is like every time that you're interacting with people as you come back, because of the work that we're doing and where we have to go visit so many people, you're seeing thousands of people. And so your interaction with this family member or this church or whatever might be really meaningful, but it's within this context of so much going on that it's really easy for me anyway to lose track of that kind of stuff. And of course I feel terrible, you know, or I mean, even worse when somebody tells me something bad that's happened and then I've forgotten that.
The first day we were back, I found out my nephew is having surgery like in 2 weeks. And I was like, what? Like, you know, thinking that my like almost 16-year-old nephew, like thinking about surgery for some, like I just, like nobody had said he was injured or anything like that. It's like those little things. It wasn't like life threatening. It was.
But a couple weeks later, Jenny came back and mentioned it in a prayer request, and I didn't know anything about it. I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah. The chain didn't keep going down there. Yeah.
So this will be our third home assignment. The first one was for a year. The second one was for 2 months for Alyssa, 4 months for me. And now this will be back for a year, which means that we've also stayed in a lot of people's homes while we've been traveling or visiting different churches. And those are the things that make me more nervous, is that somebody will be like, oh yeah, remember that time you stayed in my house? And I'll be like,
That was one of my concerns about starting Envision Berlin, because I thought there will be more people coming through. And what happens if I forget? So far, there's been grace enough. So I'm hoping that continues. I remember when we were in churches in the U.S., when you were full-time pastoring, and that I started to get a glimpse of what it's like when almost everybody knows who you are and you might not know who they are. And it's a very strange position to be in. I mean, I'm grateful when people remember who I am, but then I feel... it's one of my core things of I want people to feel cared about when I'm with them. And so if I forget their name or if I forget important details, but that's where I hope for grace to be extended.
I would not mind at all if even people who I know really well and have worked with, if they were to come up, you know, and be like, hey, it's me. This is my name. This is how we know each other. Right? Like, just assume I'm an idiot. I've forgotten everything.
My name is Alyssa. Yeah,
thank you. We've worked together for a little while.
But I think that ties into the cumulative stress of reentry, right? It's not just the food or traffic. It's also all these micro changes.
Although it will be the food and the traffic, it will be, oh man, we can't just jump on a tram. Now we've got to coordinate who goes where.
Oh yeah, because with my challenges of timeliness compared to your over timeliness.
I can't just leave without her.
I mean, you can, but then it's a lot harder for her to catch up.
I can't run as fast as a car or catch the next tram.
And I find it interesting too, how the combination of traffic changes, right? Traffic pattern changes, as well as just like, I was amazed at what I'd forgotten about how the road system worked in different places. Things that I knew without ever thinking about that I had to then stop and re-remember. That was disorienting.
That was back several years ago when we had our first year home assignment. And I had some of our nephews in the car with me, and they were teenagers. And I was like, hey guys, I'm like you right now behind the wheel because I haven't driven for a couple of years. So please keep it down. And yeah, I'm almost back to teenage driver status with this weird 20 years of experience I had before, but a big gap.
Yeah.
2 years ago when we were back and several months into my time. Well, here in Berlin, if you don't get 6,000 to 10,000 steps in a day, you're sick.
Right.
And I remember noticing, I am just not getting a lot of steps in, but it's when I had to walk several blocks and started to feel winded that I was like, I'm in trouble before I go back to Berlin. But it's just the patterns that you don't think about, right? I mean, I don't wake up in the morning and think, well, I have to make sure I get this many steps in.
I mean, so when I was back briefly, I was good at that. I was like, okay, I'm going to take the stairs instead of the elevator, or I'm going to walk to this place that in the US feels really far to walk to, but in Berlin would not, right? Like making those decisions. But over time, that gets really hard to sustain because the system isn't built for it. Mm-hmm.
And then the winter hits.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it hits here too.
But I still have to walk here.
It doesn't hit as hard here, though, as Minnesota.
Well, Stephen and Jenny, as Alyssa and I are getting ready to go back for a year, what are some tips that you would give us because of the debriefs that you've done that you would say, hey, if you can't do it before you go, as you're landing, as you're transitioning, here are some things to be thinking about.
So one of the things that we often tell short-term teams and interns before they head back is to come up with little stories, you know, the elevator pitch or whatever that you can share with people where those stories are true, but you don't have to think about them in the moment. And they also let you test how seriously somebody's engaging you. I think one of the things that happens is that in our desire to be authentic and honest and present with people, it's easy to kind of, and no offense to anybody in particular, but it's easy to kind of cast your pearls before swine, right? Like where you have something you're processing through and something you're working through that isn't appropriate for the person who is meeting you at the airport, or isn't appropriate for the, you know, the person whose house you're staying in. Like it just, you need more time with it. And so I think giving yourself permission to be honest in a way that is healthy for you and for the people you're interacting with is really important. And so, yeah, kind of ahead of time, picking some of those accurate, true stories that invite the possibility of further conversation, but aren't revealing the things that are most tender.
I think there's a sense too of the combination of giving yourself grace and giving others grace to get it wrong and navigating how non-expert you are, even though you have things that you are more of an expert in than some of the people you're talking to. I think with how much you can be lauded as like the speaker for today, like what does it mean in that process to be grace-filled with yourself and recognizing you don't have it all together all the time, even though you want to and feel like you should, or feel like there's an expectation that you like have all of the answers or that you can come fix the problem.
I think another thing would be if you find yourself on that upswing when you get back, like if there's a sense of, oh, this is really nice, like feel that, enjoy that, let it be. And then also find ways to check in maybe with a spiritual director or a mentor or somebody who you can, or a counselor. But when you start to find yourself going down the other side of that, right down into that U or W shaped valley of discomfort, to be honest about that and find people that you can share that with who have some level of understanding of what you're going through. Yeah. One of the weird things about culture shock is very often when you're experiencing it, it's very hard to identify in yourself because it's based on cumulative disorientation and not based on specific events. And so it's not like you can be like, oh, that person stepped on my toe. My toe hurts, right? It's much more generic than that. And so sometimes having people in your life who can kind of say, hey, do you think maybe you're experiencing reentry or you're experiencing reverse culture shock? And when you say no, they can say, well, here's what I'm seeing, or what about these symptoms that, you know, are you identifying with any of them? And then you can kind of say, oh, maybe that is what's going on. But it's like you sometimes need help. We all sometimes need help getting talked back into our experience. And so finding ways that you can kind of create that system for yourself. I think weirdly, the support that we tend to get organizationally is timed completely wrong. And for really good logistical reasons, but it's completely unhelpful in terms of practical support.
Yesterday, we spent a long day packing and reorganizing our house. And at one point towards the end of a day, a cable got hung up on something. And I remember just being so frustrated. Well, it wasn't the cable alone, right? It's just that there's so much
chaos. It snagged on something?
It got snagged on something, or I got snagged on the cable, and all these things started moving and sliding. And I just remember the level of frustration was not in a good comparison to the situation that was, it was completely out of proportion.
But it makes sense when you think of it as all those different straws that were laid on that camel's back before that last one. And then it's like, oh, well, this is why.
And so I think in that case, giving grace to ourselves, but also hoping that people have grace with us. Mm-hmm.
And you and me with each other. Yeah. We're both going to be going through all these things, and we understand better than anybody else what the other one's going through. But then again.
Alyssa and I have had experiences where we've been in, you know, several churches after another where we've gotten the same questions. Because people are often informed by the same media, and so their thoughts are being shaped in similar ways. And so when they hear something from us, it sparks a similar question out of them, and the temptation to get into a rote answer rather than viewing the people asking the question as individual people is really easy. And so that's part of the grace that we're working on in advance with each other to say, hey, how do we answer these questions? Even just a pause to say or to ask a clarifying question so that we can view the answer as what that answer might mean for that person rather than the general response we get easily sucked into giving.
Mm-hmm. Or without coming across as per my last email.
Well, like I said, in the last 10 churches.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
I think one of my personal things when I start to get overwhelmed and it's a different situation this time than I've had before, where this is the first time we're flying without any of our kids because our youngest is finishing up a program that's kind of halfway between going to college and doing a senior year and doing an apprenticeship. And so there's the grief, which is the normal stuff of like empty nester, and it's compounded with, it's related very directly to this career path, to this work that we're involved in. And it's a really freezing, that's one of the things. So like how to stay experiencing things as they are in the current situation rather than flashing back to all the grief things. Any ideas on how to stay present without ignoring the losses?
You've done some paying attention to frozen grief.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sense of acknowledging, like you have to acknowledge and recognize it when it's there. Because if you don't, then it's, yeah, that same sense of compounding, and it builds a spot. It's like when you have like a callus that builds, and you know, that callus is protecting, you know, a point that really hurts. So what does it mean to work through that callus in a way that feels healthy and healing, but not like you're tearing it apart? How do you not stab the callus? But what does it mean to like gently work back the layers to be like, oh, that's the pain point, and that's what I need to recognize? Yeah, I think there's that.
I think the concepts of ambiguous loss and frozen grief have been important for us as we've been thinking about what kinds of weird losses we experience in this life of international living, where it's like you're not losing somebody a lot of times, but you are losing something, and trying to name it can be really challenging. And then finding that, I think one of the things that also becomes one of those maybe cable snag moments, right, is when somebody says, oh yeah, I experienced the same thing, and they totally didn't, right? They totally didn't, but they mean well. And so like trying to be present with them in their own expression of, you know, an attempt of empathy or sympathy. But that also becomes then more straws on the camel's back, right? Like, and at the same time, I think we probably do that too without realizing it. I think it's just that our, like the, is it Cerny Smith and some of those other stress measures for people who do what we do, like our base level of stress is so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it like literally is just, it's a higher base level of stress. And so recognizing that that's always going on in interactions that wouldn't otherwise be overwhelming, or with loss situations that wouldn't be, some of them would, right? Some of them would still be super disruptive, but some of them just, you know, when your base level of stress is lower, you have a lot more capacity to deal with things without it being overwhelming. And our base level of stress is so much higher. And the move years are times where that's even more so the case.
Mm-hmm. I just realized that I'll enjoy my first glass of pop or whatever with ice, but after that I'll be like, can I stop having this very cold thing put in front of me every day?
Very cold, very sweet. Yeah.
I want to hit on just two more things. The first thing is, another thing I would like people to maybe understand is that as much as we enjoy seeing people in the U.S. and having the opportunity to share about what we're doing, it's not our primary calling. And so our year back in the U.S. is often a year that's taken away from what we feel most called to do, not only called to do. But there is a sense of very felt loss in not being with the people that we feel the most
in sync with and working with. And
yeah, I mean, I think,
but also the people that you care, like that you have a primary sense of calling to serve,
right? Mm-hmm. The people that we've spent, also that we've spent years getting to know. And working hard to become increasingly efficient is the wrong word for working with people, but the
effective
at being a part of. And there are very few jobs that you can really just take a year away from and then get back at the same place that you were. And so there is that sense of loss. And sometimes we feel that more than others. Another part that I'd like to touch on is the idea of what this does to teams is not always easy either. That we, the four of us, have done a lot of very intentional work at being able to work well together and figuring out what that means with our different personalities. And being apart for a year, possibly two, makes that a lot harder.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where just the simple physical reality of the time difference is like perfectly awful.
Yeah.
A 12-hour might be easier than the 6 or 7.
100%. 100%. Stephen and I felt that dramatically. And I know you guys did when you were not doing home assignment together. But just, yeah, recently Stephen and I were like, I'm going, you know, when he was gone, I'm going to bed and he's still got a good portion of his day left. Or, yeah, and I know, Mike, you felt that with emails and things. You're waking up to like what feels like urgent emails from us. And it's like,
it's 6 a.m. and my inbox is full of tasks.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's an awful way to wake up. Like, awful.
Like, yeah, on the work days, there was no time that Jenny and I were both awake that it wasn't the work day for one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think something that I've been processing through with that is like, we've done a lot of work. We as our team, you know, how long were the like 2 or 3 days where we spent like processing, all right, this is what the roles, you know, this is the chart that we have, this is our workflow, like what makes sense, how do we do this? You know, we spent a long time trying to figure out the logistics of our processes and the way we function and what can we still do and what can we still not do. And it's like, I think we have some good answers and some good movement and good direction, but then there's also just the reality of like, how does it flow when there's like, you know, life happens and there's spontaneous things that disrupt the flow or that, and it's not, I think it's not
sometimes really good things, right? Like there's a new type of sale of a book, right? Like happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Like that took me 3 hours because I was doing it by myself for a single book sale. And like, that's great. That's great. It's positive. It's good. But like doing that together with you is way more fun and also more efficient.
Yeah. And simple things like when I called over, hey, Stephen, I need this receipt. You know, that's a 5-minute turnaround when we're both in the office together. It's 9 hours or more. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sending it to you and you're getting it in the middle of movie night with your family. And you're like, man, Mike just doesn't respect my family time.
No respect. I think there's also the piece that just we literally aren't you guys. And like there are people in our neighborhood who recognize you and you'll mm-hmm. be gone. Mm-hmm. And so can we carry on without you? Sure, but we can't carry on as you.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things also is that missing people in one location doesn't mean that I don't love the people in the other location.
That's true.
I have, it's kind of like when, I mean, an easy example for me is I don't love my kids more or less than each other. Like you, I had one child and then I had two and I loved them. You know, it's like there's more room.
Half your love.
Right. And then the third. And so I think that's also an important thing that if we're missing or when we're missing people that are over here in Europe, it doesn't mean that we don't care about the people that we are with when we're stateside and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate your guys' insight. And I do think one of the things Alyssa and I are looking forward to the least or most dreading is the idea, maybe not dreading, but will be a grief point for us is just not being able to be with you guys as much mm-hmm. in the office while we're gone.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because I think that's a sign that we had a good last 3 years mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. our intentional, deeper life together community mm-hmm. has been happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't, what's the word? Shudder at the thought of coming into the office. You know, I'm not like, oh no, I gotta spend time with those people.
Not most days.
but I might feel that way a little bit when nobody else is here. You know,
mm-hmm. It is weird when the office yeah. is empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like walking into an empty church.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say tomb, right. But yeah.
That too.
Good. Well, we'll bring this episode to a close. It'll be interesting when we get back here in Berlin to kind of talk again about what was that like. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today on Trax Cultures. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to dive deeper, we invite you to join our community on Discord. It's a space for sharing experiences, asking questions, and connecting with others who are navigating similar journeys. See the link in our show notes to become part of our growing community. Your support means the world to us. And if you'd like to help us continue our work as a creative community looking for the meeting place of faith, art, and culture, consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/envisionberlin to find out how you can contribute. Until next time, keep embracing change and embodying transformative hope for humanity.
This podcast was produced by Envision Berlin in our studios located in Berlin, Germany. If you'd like to send us a note, feel free to send your email to podcast@envisionberlin.com. Thanks for listening.